Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Friday live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. An hour from now, we don't really have a blazing five, but I'll tell you who I like in all four playoff games. Joy Taylor is joining me in a Friday. We're packed today. Moose Johnson of the Cowboys, Peter King, Albert Breer, Eric Dickerson. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. The playoffs are here.
Here we go.
Hallelujah. Let's do it.
Hallelujah. You know, it's interesting. I was looking this morning at it's been the last 10 to 15 years have been the era, certainly the decade of the dynasties. The Warriors had a dynasty for 5 years. Alabama's had it for 10 years. And the Patriots have had it for 20 years. And they're all ending. They're all ending. Clemson is the new Bama. Okay. Golden State imploded. Durant's not coming back. I mean, nothing wrong with Klay and Steph and Draymond. That's good. It's not special. Alabama's very good. They're not as special. May lose to Saban's just hemorrhaging really good assistant coaches and coordinators, and New England's going to end maybe this weekend. I suspect they'll win this weekend. But it's been interesting. Patriots 20, Bama 10, Warriors 5, they're all ending. Still be good, still be respected, won't be feared. You're never going to see this again. This has been the perfect storm. 20 years, 9 Super Bowls, and 6 wins. Now, a lot of it is because Belichick's great and Brady is great. But there are breaks, and a lot of times, whether it's Facebook, it's Apple, it's Microsoft, there is a perfect storm that develops. And 4 or 5 things went New England's way. 1, Bill Belichick, a brilliant coach with a chip on his shoulder after being fired in Cleveland, goes to New England. He then stumbles, let's be honest, stumbles into an equally aspirational quarterback named Tom Brady. Brady marries a supermodel who has a greater net worth, allowing Tom, let's be honest, a humble kid anyway, to take some pay cuts, sprinkle the money around. They're in a division with abject dysfunction, Buffalo, Jets, and Miami, which allows them 20 years. This is a break. 20 years of bad quarterbacks, mostly, bad coaches, bad GMs, weak ownership, home field advantage, and a bye to start the playoffs. And let's just throw this in, mostly Tom Brady was injury free. This is never going to happen again in football. Just to give you some context, Brady has 30 playoff wins. Lamar, Mahomes, Deshaun, Josh Allen, Tannehill have a combined 1. And in their careers, they won't get there because they won't have the breaks. So let's talk about 3 quarterbacks who we think have the talent and many of the components of Brady and who fell way short. Let's take Aaron Rodgers. So Aaron Rodgers ends up with 1 Super Bowl appearance and only 9 playoff wins. That is 1/4 of Brady. He had injuries because he sat for 3 years. He didn't make big boy money until year 7 in the NFL. He's not taking pay cuts. And his division was a little more competent. And he also had a head coach he never really connected with. So he ends up with less than a quarter of Tom Brady's career. Let's go to Drew Brees. First of all, they had a natural disaster. That was not an obstacle, which is remarkable in itself. But they only have 1 Super Bowl and 8 playoff wins. So that's 1/4 of Brady. Well, let's look at it. Brees, bumpy career, came in, and when he got the chance to make big boy money, he took it. And it hurt the franchise for years. It's also a much more competent division. Matt Ryan's competent. Ron Rivera and Cam got to a Super Bowl. Atlanta got to a Super Bowl. So much more competent division. Also, Drew had to rebuild a franchise. He really spent a lot of time twice rebuilding the franchise. Let's go to Peyton Manning, who ends up with roughly little less than half of Brady's accomplishments. 4 Super Bowl appearances and 14 playoff wins. His division was actually fairly competent. He dealt with several head coaches in Denver and Indianapolis. He had injuries at the end, and the Colts decided we're bailing and we're going to go with Andrew Luck. A lot of this stuff, we'll see another Alabama. It's called Clemson. We'll see another Golden State Warriors. You know, a 4 or 5 year run when stars combine. Could be the Lakers, could be the Clippers, who knows. You're not going to see New England again. I'm not saying in no way is skill, acumen, intelligence, focus not part of it. But man, they got some breaks. When you find the great dynasties, they always get breaks. Bad owners in the AFC East, bad quarterbacks, bad draft picks. And let's be honest. Brady and Belichick were equally non-nostalgic, equally focused. Tom was asked yesterday about all the records, and this is classic Brady.
I'm not much for nostalgia, you know. I'm just pretty focused on what I need to do, It's this week's felt pretty much like every other week for the last 20 years. I haven't thought about those things, and I wouldn't be thinking about those things anyway. It's felt like a normal week for me, so I just approach practice like I always have and try to do the best I could do. So that's what I'm gonna do this weekend as well.
Win or lose, we just came out. 2020 is a new year. It's the end of the dynasties. Golden State's evaporated. Bama's still good, not as good as Clemson. And New England may beat Tennessee, but if you think they're going to Kansas City and Baltimore and pulling off W's there, it's not going to happen. Let me shift to the Cowboys coaching search. Jason Garrett has been interviewed several times. Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones are treating Jason Garrett like anybody would treat family if you have to fire him, which is to say they're treating him well. You know, I was thinking about this morning. The Lakers, the Yankees, and the Cowboys are the biggest American sports brands. But let's just concentrate on the Cowboys and the Lakers. These are very similar trajectories. These are family-owned businesses. And the families don't like outsiders. Doesn't matter if it's Walmart, Sam Walton, it doesn't matter if it's that. Jerry Jones, this is a crucial hire. Because as we know, 7 of the 8, and you can argue 8 of the 8 divisions this year, were won by the head coach quarterback combo that's the best. And now they're going to hire a coach, and nobody thinks Dak is a top 5 quarterback. This is a huge hire. And if you look at what the Cowboy family, the Jones family, has done, they have briefly relinquished power, and it has worked both times. They relinquished power to Jimmy Johnson, but he was an outsider because Jimmy got famous before the Cowboys. And Bill Parcells was also invited in, but Bill Parcells made his money and got famous and had success before the Cowboys. They're outsiders. Chan Gailey, Dave Campbell, Wade Phillips, Jason Garrett, they were elevated by the Cowboys brand. I mean, Dave Campbell, Wade Phillips, best jobs they've ever had. Jason Garrett, best job he ever had. Chan Gailey, Barry Switzer, that's the best job they've ever had. They're not a threat to Jerry Jones. Parcells and Jimmy Johnson were rock stars before Dallas. They're viewed as outsiders. This is the same thing for the Lakers. Pat Riley played for the Lakers. Jerry West played for the Lakers. Kobe is a Laker. Magic's a Laker. Phil Jackson was an outsider. Phil Jackson got famous playing for the Knicks and got really famous coaching the Bulls. So Phil Jackson, even though he was within the family, like Jimmy Johnson and Parcells, is kind of an outsider. He never wore the Laker uniform. Well, Phil Jackson's a Laker. No, I actually, very many people think of him as a Bulls coach and as a Knicks player. And I don't think as Parcells, I don't see him as a Cowboy coach. I think Parcells, New York Giants. You think of Jimmy Johnson with the Dallas Cowboys. I think of him as much with the Miami Hurricanes when I was first introduced to him. And I also think about him living in the Keys and coaching the Dolphins. And so with both the Lakers, go look at who Jerry has hired after he relinquished power. He went to people, Barry, Chan Gailey, Campo, then after Parcells, Phillips, Jason Garrett, who didn't push back, who understood, who ran the family. Parcells didn't give a rip about the family. Jimmy wasn't family. I mean, Jimmy and Jerry didn't talk much the first 3 years. Jimmy was doing football. Jerry was, you know, he bought that Cowboy team on credit. He was trying to make the business work. And then the minute Jimmy got to be a rock star, Jerry didn't like it. It's the same thing for the Lakers. They gave an outsider the power with Phil Jackson. Go look at who they've hired after Phil Jackson, people that needed them. You know, Mike Brown, Mike D'Antoni, Frank Vogel, Byron Scott, people they're comfortable with. And so you may think Phil Jackson's a Laker and Bill's a Cowboy and Jimmy's a Cowboy. Those people were rock stars before the organization and before the family was never comfortable. They briefly gave up power to an outsider and the outsider won and got a lot of credit. And the Lakers never loved that Phil Jackson got all that credit. They didn't like it. And the Cowboys and Jerry didn't like that Parcells, who rebuilt a messy franchise, and Jimmy Johnson got the credit. These are the big families in American sports, the Lakers and the Cowboys. And when they relinquish it, they win, but they don't like it because the brand's bigger than the title. It really is. The Cowboys brand is big regardless of titles, and the Lakers brand is huge regardless of titles. They don't like relinquishing power and any ownership, not just stake, but a feeling that Phil runs the Lakers and Jimmy runs the Cowboys. So I think this is a massive hire for the Cowboys, and I don't think Jerry Jones has it in him to hire Urban Meyer, who was a rock star long before the Cowboys. Lincoln Riley, Jerry can make him. He can mostly make him. Urban Meyer doesn't need Jerry Jones to be a rock star. His legacy on TV as a broadcaster, great, and college football coach, icon. And I just don't think Jerry has the guts, like the Lakers have struggled with, to let an outsider in and be the face of the brand.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
This is not, by the way, a shot at any of the reporters breaking these varied stories. But when I hear stuff like Cleveland Browns interested in Urban Meyer. Yeah, and single guys are attracted to beautiful girls. Of course Cleveland's interested in Urban Meyer. Cleveland Browns like Josh McDaniels. Yeah, he's been tied to a dynasty for a decade, I would imagine. Mike McCarthy on the Browns' radar. Yeah, he's got a Super Bowl. I would suspect that's true. Listen, Cleveland's is a hazmat spill. Put caution tape around the franchise. In my career, I have on more than one occasion told a broadcaster, this is the best word you can ever use. No. Don't do every job. Don't take every assignment. Don't fall in love with money. Track good management. Take jobs. Have discretion. Don't put yourself out there or look like a fool. Don't take a job because they offer you a nickel more than another place. Cleveland's a bad job. Romeo Crennel's the only guy that's been given 3 years since Marty Schottenheimer in the 80s is the last guy that took a Cleveland Brown job and is brand improved. Everybody else takes the job. It's a career ender. Josh McDaniel's already been fired once. Mike McCarthy been fired once. You can't roll the dice on Cleveland. That's a terrible job. Now, if you're Robert Saleh, you're not going to get another head coaching offer. You could probably take it. If you're Kevin Stefanski and you got passed over multiple times, you've only worked for the Vikings, maybe you take it. But I'm hearing a lot of this. Oh, the Browns are interested in. Folks, the most dysfunctional franchise in the NFL and the most dysfunctional college program is led by Jimmy Haslam. He's the number one booster of the Volunteers, the Tennessee Volunteers, who are the most underachieving, last 10 years, most underachieving college football power in the country, and the Browns are the most dysfunctional organization. This is a bad job. This is just, you do not take this job if you're Josh McDaniels, because you know you're not going to get, and you're taking Baker Mayfield, who now isn't close to Lamar, isn't nearly as good as Big Ben, and if the Bengals draft Joe Burrow, you got the fourth most talented quarterback in your own division. So I'm seeing all these names with Cleveland. I'm like, yeah, of course, Cleveland's attracted all these people. But Mike McCarthy, listen, I get the attraction one way. Mike McCarthy could get the Giants job. I don't understand people that don't see the Giants being a really good job. Non-meddling owner, franchise quarterback in a rookie deal. Dallas doesn't have that. Dak's going to get paid. Star running back. And you have a number four pick. Now, Gettleman's terrible in front of a microphone. He's awful. But he can draft okay. You know, he took Daniel Jones over Dwayne Haskins. Y'all freaked out, and it looks like Daniel Jones is way better than Dwayne Haskins. So he's bad in front of a microphone, and he's only there for one more year, maybe more, maybe not. But this organization, to me, is ready to roll. That number four pick the Giants have is massive because the three teams after the Giants all want a quarterback, and all three could hop over the other and give the Giants multiple picks. Giants, to me, is a great organization. Non-meddling owner. They've won before. Rookie quarterback. Don't have to pay your quarterback for three more years. You don't have to pay him anything. And they really just need to rebuild their defense. Their offense is good enough to win a lot of games. They just need to upgrade the defense. This job to me feels like you got everything in your eye. You got the star running back, the franchise quarterback. O-line doesn't need to rebuild. It's not that bad. You've got some guys who can catch, nice young tight end, good wide receivers. You just got to rebuild that defensive front. And with that four pick, you're either going to get a great defensive player or trade down a couple of picks and get multiple picks and figure out your defense. The Raiders figured out their offense in one draft. You can do that. The Raiders went out and got Hunter Renfrow and Jacobs, and they got some offensive linemen in free agency. You can figure out one side of the ball in one draft in free agency period. Raiders did it with their offense. I think the Giants could do it with their defense.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
You know, during the year I do Blazing 5, but in the Blazing 5 I've got 15, 16 games to pick from, and I pick 5. There's only one game here, maybe two I would actually bet. I only have 4 games on the docket. There's one I think's a pretty good bet. Outside of that, I'm just going to tell you who I think is going to win the games. I like 2 favorites this weekend, and I like 2 underdogs to win outright this weekend. So let's not waste any time and get to the picks for our wild card weekend.
Bills at Texans.
Listen, I would take the underdog Buffalo Bills to win this. I think they're going to win it straight out. I think coaching matters in the playoffs, and I think they have the better coaching staff. Now, Bill O'Brien's not a bad coach because you can't keep winning your division. And they do with a bad coach. But the Texans have been outgained this year. They remind me of a really talented flag football team where you never know what you're going to get. They can be totally outplayed. But because their quarterback and wide receivers are so gifted, they make crap up and win. But the Bills have one of the better defenses in the NFL. They do not give up cheap touchdowns. And Houston lives off cheap touchdowns. And the Buffalo Bills don't give them up. Their defense, number 2 in total defense, number 2 in scoring defense. Also, Josh Allen, if you worry about him, the young quarterback for Buffalo, bizarrely better on the road this year, much better on the road than he was at home. I'm going to take Buffalo to win the game straight out, regardless of points, 24-23 Bills.
Titans at Patriots.
I like New England to win the football game. Listen, first of all, they're undefeated this year when they hold people under 20. And Ryan Tannehill, in his career, has faced the Patriots and Belichick a lot. He's been awful. Belichick destroys average quarterbacks. And most of Tannehill's career, forget the last 2 months, he's been average. He's 0-6 at Foxborough, 5 touchdowns, 10 picks, and a passer rating of 70. Tannehill has been eaten alive by Belichick. And I do think Tennessee here has better offensive personnel by a stretch. But believe me, Belichick knows Tannehill. He knows Vrabel. And New England, special teams are still great. Defense is still excellent. Home, they're great. They're excellent situationally. They're brilliantly coached. And Brady can still muster up, if he doesn't face a great pass rush, very good halves of football. I think the Patriots win this puppy. It's kind of classic New England. They'll get a fumble or two. They'll block a punt. 27-24 Patriots.
Vikings at Saints.
Listen, everybody likes the Saints, so do I. Now, the wise guys like Minnesota and the points. I just think New Orleans wins by more than a touchdown. It's a Kirk Cousins factor. Now, if Delvin Cook plays, Minnesota can take the ball and play a little bit of keep away. But I think the Saints' defense is better than everybody thinks. We know their offense is great. They're averaging 34 points a game since week 11. You know, they have Mike Thomas is a guaranteed 12 targets and 9 catches a game. Drew Brees in the last 4 games, 15 touchdowns, no picks. They have one of the great home field advantages, and they don't turn it over. Unlike the Texans, you get the upside without the goofiness. Only 8 turnovers, the fewest in the NFL. And let's be honest, Minnesota's been good my entire life. Do you trust the Vikings in big spots? They haven't won a road playoff game since 2005. There are moments they've outplayed teams at home like the Seahawks years ago, and they can't kick a 15-yard field goal. I just don't trust Minnesota. I haven't all year. I do not trust them in this spot, so I'm going to take the Saints to win around the number 28-20.
Seahawks and Eagles.
This is the toughest game for me. This is the one, you know, Philadelphia's getting points. I think Philadelphia's going to win a very close football game. They're both falling apart physically. I get two great quarterbacks and two excellent coaches. Carson Wentz has carried this franchise. Now, some people say, well, has Carson Wentz ever played a playoff game? The last 3 weeks have felt like a playoff game. Seattle travels very well. But if you go look at Russell Wilson, he's lost his last 3 road playoff games. I just don't think Seattle against this Philadelphia defensive front is going to muster a consistent offense, and they're going to be kind of beholden for Russell Wilson to save them. I think he's going to be under duress all weekend. Philadelphia is a very limited offensive football team. They can kind of win one way, but Wentz is hot. Philadelphia is at home. They have a major advantage, defensive line to Seahawks offensive line. They're beat up, but they feel less beat up today than they were a month ago. I would take Philadelphia in overtime. I actually think this is going to be the game of the weekend to watch. I think this is going to be a great football game. Classic, tough, great coaches, great quarterback play. 26-23, Philadelphia in overtime wins the game. And those are my picks. So I take the dog Buffalo Bills to win on the road, the dog Eagles to win at home. And I think the Saints and the you're going to have an upset here. You're not going to have 4 favorites win. That it never works that way. So there you have it.
What's going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast. If you like football, that's what I talk. Football, football, and more football. Go subscribe. Coming up on this week's show, Urban Meyer to the Cowboys. Does that even make sense? Are there parallels there to Jimmy Johnson? We'll dive in. The SEC haters, they've lost the argument. And you know we're diving into the NFL playoffs. Again, John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast. Go subscribe.
I do think New England's fascinating because I think they've been a dynasty for 20 years, and I think it's going to end. I think they'll win this weekend. Then I think there's just younger teams that draft better with more dynamic quarterbacks. But, you know, it's funny about dynasties, and I talked an hour ago about how the Warriors had one for 5 years, Bama for 10, New England for 20, and they're all ending. They're all – their last decade was the decade of dynasties. This decade, Serena's not as dominant. Federer's not as dominant. It feels like a lot of dynasties are ending. You know, and Brady was asked going into this weekend if he wanted to talk and romanticize the past.
I'm not much for nostalgia, you know. I'm just pretty focused on what I need to do. It's this week's felt pretty much like every other week for the last 20 years. I haven't thought about those things, and you know, I wouldn't be thinking about those things anyway. It's felt like a normal week for me. So I just approach practice like I always have, and try to do the best I could do. So that's what I'm gonna do this weekend as well.
You know, it's funny about if you look at dynasties. I look at dynasties in sports the same way I look at wealth in business. Boring wins. You know, somebody once told me this about the wealthiest Americans. They said there's a reason artists aren't billionaires, because they have to recreate great. Billionaires create a product, put it in a conveyor belt, and sell it over and over, repetition, rinse, and repeat. It's boring. Wealth is boring. Create a product and sell it over and over, the same product. That's what Apple does. Zuckerberg does. That's what you do. If you go look at the dynasties and the people who have led them over the last 20 years, Belichick, Saban, Popovich, Jeter, Brady, Tim Duncan, and I would say Steph Curry as an NBA star is kind of boring. Not his game, but Family Guy, wears nurse's shoes, loves to golf. Really, you never see him getting in trouble. Boring, the ability to be repetitive, go to bed early, be turned on by process, love information. That's what wins. That is Duncan. That's Popovich. That's Saban. That's Belichick. That's Jeter. That's Brady. That's Steph Curry. You know, you say, well, Jeter was a single guy and Curry is game is, but they're really into process. They're really into their pregame, their rituals, their diet, how they live, how they eat. And, you know, it's the more lit you are, the less, because I'll tell you what blows up dynasties. Flakes. Kevin Durant's a flake. He's talented, but he's a flake. Egos, Jerry Jones, Kobe and Shaq. That blows up dynasties. And, you know, I never forget, you know, Belichick and Brady, they're what I would call process guys. They get up early. They're not late night guys. They love watching film, breaking down stuff. And wealth and dynasties, you may think on the outside, you may think they're just fascinating and flashy in their ego. You go look at the Chicago Bulls. Michael Jordan was lifting weights, regardless of cocktails, every morning of game days. 8 a.m. he was in the gym. Didn't matter how late he stayed out. Nobody worked harder than Chicago. Nobody had tougher practices. Nobody was more physical. They'd play their cards on the private jets. They had wild off seasons, but in season, they were complete process-driven, rinse and repeat grinders. Never forget that Tom versus Time video where Tom in the off season, this is the off season, married to a supermodel, $800 million net worth, and here's Tom in Tom versus Time.
I watch tape all day Monday, all day Tuesday. You know, Wednesday we practice, Thursday we practice, Friday we practice, and I come home and I watch film. And Saturday before the game, I watch film. And then Sunday morning, I watch film. And the whole time, I'm just trying to get tells. I don't know why I can sit here and watch it and, you know, process information quickly, but I can. I mean, I could literally, like, just watch film all day. It's almost, like, soothing because I've been doing it for so long. I can just go 4 or 5 hours without getting up from this chair.
That is what creates wealth and dynasties. The ability to just sit there and be boring and be in the information and process. And, you know, remember that movie? It wasn't The Wolf of Wall Street. It was the other one, the Michael Lewis book, The Big Short, where they found the guy that bet against the market and he just sat at his computer all day and he didn't have a social life. And everybody's going to dinners on Wall Street and and he was just sitting all day in his computer and he goes, oh, this economy is a total fraud. The banks are fraudulent. None of this stuff works. It doesn't make any sense. It was the process guy with no social life that basically made zillions of dollars in 2008 when the market crashed. Michael Lewis wrote the book on it. So there's something to me very attractive to this kind of lifestyle.
Well, sustained success is very boring.
Like, not a
one-hit wonder, like that can happen and it's fun and it's exciting and then okay, do it again.
I'll give you an example. You've heard of the band Kiss?
Yes.
So Kiss has been around since the 70s.
Right.
So Gene Simmons and what's the other guy? Paul Stanley. They're the remaining two members of KISS.
Right.
So I had a buddy go on one of their concerts. They both make 30, 40 million bucks a year still. They bought the other members out because the other members were partiers and fun and got into drugs, so they bought them out. Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons of KISS. So I had a buddy that was on their private jets. Long story, but he does business with their restaurants. So like once a year, he goes on the jet when KISS, Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons do it. They fly in the day of the concert. They land, get makeup on, perform. The minute they get off, they put them in robes. They take the makeup off. They take the robe off. They walk on the jet. And within 5 minutes, they cross their arms and Stanley and Gene Simmons are asleep. And then they land and they drive an SUV home to their families. And they do this 60 times a year and make $40 million. And I said, what was it like? He goes, I wanted to party with them. He goes, they don't party. It's just business. It's fly, makeup, robe, makeup off, sign 10 autographs, fall asleep in a jet, picked up at the airport, in bed by 3 a.m.
You mean you can't party till 5 a.m. until you're 70 and
yeah, the bands do that. Yeah, bands do that. They end
you know,
up-
Gene Simmons was trending recently because he revealed that he puts ice cubes in his cereal.
To keep the milk cold.
What, you say that, well, it's like a normal thing.
I've done that before, yeah. I put ice cubes in my cereal. Well, it's not that strange. It keeps the milk cold.
How long are you eating the cereal that the milk gets warm?
Well, I take my time with my cereal. You put ice cubes in your cereal. I don't do it regularly, but I've done it before.
Your New Year's resolution should be to stop doing that.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that strange. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's yeah.
You want the milk cold. It fortifies the cereal.
How long does it take you to eat a bowl of cereal that your milk gets warm?
Well, I take my time with cereal. I enjoy Cocoa Puffs for a good 20 minutes.
I don't know. I guess I shouldn't be judging. I like mushy cereal.
Yeah, I don't. I like mine formidable.
I like it to get nice and soggy.
Yeah.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
With that, we bring in Peter King at NBCSports.com via the Coward Global Satellite Network. I don't think I'm being hyperbolic. It kind of feels like the end. They'll still be good. They won't be feared. I don't think New England's as feared as previous times. What are your thoughts on that, Peter?
You know, Colin, as I wrote in my column this week, I don't think this is the end of the New England Patriots, but I do think it's the end of something in New England. We just don't know yet. Will Josh McDaniels go, the offensive coordinator who has Tom Brady's undying trust, maybe. Will Tom Brady go? Maybe. Will Bill Belichick go? Doubtful. But look, nobody knows anything about Bill Belichick's contract or his future because he just never talks about it. I don't think he talks about it to anybody, probably other than his wife. He's very, very quiet about all that stuff. So something's going to end in New England. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah, I you know, it's funny. I talked about this yesterday. When Peyton Manning left, he had a lot of suitors. And if you remember this, Peter, he went to Denver, had good ownership, had won Super Bowls. They had a nice offensive line, and they had some weapons. And, I mean, Seattle wanted him, San Francisco, a lot of smart people. I could see Tom looking at Chris Ballard, Frank Reich, that young offensive line, multiple tight ends. I could see Tom saying, I want to stay in the AFC. It's indoors. I don't want to get hit as much. I don't think that's crazy. I don't think that's a hot take. When I say to you, you know, by the way, I know you and I both know the Colts are going to draft a quarterback in the next 2 years, and they may not have the draft capital to get ahead of San Diego or Cincinnati or Miami. Brady to the Colts, Brady to the Chargers. Does it sound nuts to you?
Neither one of those sounds nuts to me. And I think that the whole issue is going to be, I think there's going to be two things that Tom Brady is going to have to decide. A, does he want to still keep playing? And B, does he want to go back to New England? And I think the biggest issue about going back to New England is that, and look, I have not talked to him about this. I don't know this to be the case. But just how would you feel if you're Tom Brady and every year the New England Patriots basically pile an offense on your shoulders that is nowhere near the most talented offense in football? And every year they basically say to Tom, okay, Tom, fix it. You know, make our offense great. And for years he has. This year he couldn't. You know, I think the biggest day for this Patriots team this year was on a Sunday back in March when Rob Gronkowski left and Jared Cook signed as a free agent with the New Orleans Saints. That was going to be a guy who the Patriots were going to go hard after. But because it took Gronkowski so long to make his decision, then they could never get a tight end. Then I don't know why they did this. They traded Jacob Hollister to Seattle, and they really could have used Jacob Hollister to tight end,
yeah,
you know, as this year went on. Then they drafted the wrong guy, evidently, and Keel Harry over A.J. Brown. So, you know, it was just a bad year choreographing and populating this offense around Tom Brady.
You know, for some reason, I think you used to cover the New York Giants in your early, early, early days. You maybe didn't, but I have this. You did, yeah. And it's funny about these great organizations. I'm a big believer in evolve, evolve, evolve. And the Giants, the criticism is, you know, they have not jumped headfirst into analytics. You know, they're very, very old school, and you know they've you've seen the results the last several years. But I still contend my quarterback Daniel Jones on a rookie contract for 3 more years. I think they've got nice offensive talent, a star running back. I contend this is a very good job in your reporting in NFL circles. Does it feel like the Giants are still an elite job in this league, Peter?
What a question that is. I think some people would say, yes, give me that job. I think Matt Rhule would love to get that job. I mean, he's a New Yorker. You know, he grew up loving the Giants and all that. So, I think there are some people who would look at that job. I think Mike McCarthy would love that job. But I think there's one thing to keep in mind. Yes, they have Saquon Barkley, okay? But they still are in the process of rebuilding the offensive line. They have one receiver, Darius Slayton, long-term, who looks like he's going to be pretty good. Evan Engram is totally unreliable. You have no idea if he can stay healthy, so you don't know if you've got a tight end. You've got a couple of no-name tight ends who played pretty well this year. And then you tell me on defense one player who scares an offensive coordinator preparing for to play the Giants. There isn't one. You know, and now because they won a couple down the stretch, they're going to miss out on Chase Young. So, you know, really, I think the Giants have a lot of rebuilding to do. And look, John Mara, at a crucial time in franchise history, is doubling down on Dave Gettleman. And it doesn't seem to be the smartest move, quite honestly. And we'll see if he is, if it is. Because Gettleman, this is going to be one of the most important off seasons in the history, recent history of the Giants. Not just in who they hire as a coach, but in their plans during the draft and what can they do in free agency with 60-some million in cap room available.
Yeah. Is there, you look at this college, Urban Meyer, Lincoln Riley, Dallas Cowboys. I said earlier, Phil Jackson won with the Lakers, but Pat Riley and Jerry West played for him. Phil was an outsider, and the Lakers never loved him getting all the credit. Similarly, Jimmy Johnson and Parcells, they were rock stars before Jerry Jones. He liked the Campo, Wade Phillips, Jason Garrett. That these big family, massive family brands, Lakers and the Cowboys, even when they've won with Phil Jackson or Jimmy, there's this sense that it's ours, you're taking way too much credit. Do you think the Cowboys have the guts to go get an Urban Meyer, who was a rock star long before he would take a Cowboy job and doesn't need the Cowboys?
I don't think Jerry Jones ever had a problem with Jimmy Johnson being a star until he felt that Jimmy Johnson was trying to take all the credit. From the day he started coaching the Dallas Cowboys to the day he left, Bill Parcells, the number one fan in his fan club was Jerry Jones. They got along famously. And Parcells would bitch and moan some, but he liked working for Jerry Jones. At the end of it, Jerry Jones handed Bill Parcells the keys to a Papa John's restaurant, a franchise. I mean, that's how much, just off the books, just because here, I want you to have this. And look, here's the thing about working for Jerry Jones. It is a totally different thing to do. But in my opinion, and I've said this to two candidates who may be coaches next year in the NFL, go in, if you do talk to Jerry Jones, my strong recommendation is to go into it with an open mind. There are things that you're not going to like about Jerry, but Jerry is going to give you every resource possible to win. And if you can take him having 94 talk shows and talking after the games instead of the players or in addition to, if you can take all that, you know, this guy is not a domineering nut. And that is the reputation he has. I've seen it. I've seen him during draft times. I've seen him swallow what he wants to do and say to the guys in the room, okay, listen, we're going to do that. You know, he did that 4 years ago. He desperately wanted Paxton Lynch and they didn't get him. And Jerry was upset, but he acceded to the wishes of the guys in his draft room.
By the way, Josh McDaniels, gut feeling. Where's he end up?
Gut feeling is Cleveland.
Wow.
Look, in my opinion, Colin, in my opinion, I think if you look at Urban Meyer, and Urban Meyer is obviously a great football coach, but he reminds me of a guy who every year you're going to have to wonder, is he a long-termer? You know, or do you hire Urban Meyer to get you out of the muck and mire? No pun intended. And to get yourself to a 10-win plateau. And then if he leaves, you're okay because he has saved your franchise. If you're okay with that, then he's an okay hire. But I don't think you hire Urban Meyer thinking, here's our guy for the next 10 years. Here's our Paul Brown.